This is an iHeart podcast.
Let's talk about sending the National Guard into Chicago and other cities. Let's talk about that RFK hearing. What happened with the Epstein press conference? All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, so let's just cover this briefly because we have a huge show with amazing guests. Spicer is here and Cerno and Jennifer Gilardi. So I wanted to cover a concern I have. Crime in big cities. We hate it. You hate it and I hate it. Even if you don't live in one, even if you don't ever visit, it's kind of crappy. It makes us look bad that New York City's dirty and crime-ridden, that Chicago's dirty and crime-ridden, that LA's dirty and crime-ridden. We don't like it. And we know, you know as well as I do, that that's not the case in every big city around the world. There are all kinds of very big cities that are very clean and quite safe. So why is it that way here? Because Democrats run them, and Democrats do it on purpose. They create this poverty, crime-ridden disaster because it keeps them in power. That's why. That's why it exists. And we don't like it. You don't like it, and I don't like it. And Trump doesn't like it either. And he comes in, takes over as president, and first things first, does not like the filth and the violence and the murder in Washington, D.C. So he orders up the National Guard. And you cheered, and I cheered. Thrilled he did it. I'm thrilled it's happening right now. And we've seen crime numbers have dropped off a cliff. There aren't murders anymore. Robberies. All of a sudden, the place is clean and safe. It's a place you can take your family, even with little kids, and go enjoy the new Korean War Memorial. Go enjoy the Vietnam Memorial. Go enjoy your nation's capital. And when stuff like that happens, here's what we do. We go, oh, that's wonderful. Let's do that everywhere. Let's do that in New York City. Let's do that in Chicago. Let's do that everywhere. And Trump has announced, when it comes to places like Chicago, that he intends to.
Mind up on Chicago, though?
Well, we're going in. I didn't say when we're going in. Washington, D.C. is a totally safe city. You're not reporting any crime because there is none. They said crime is down 87%. And I said, no, it's not. It's down 100%. We have a great thing going. I could do that with Chicago. We could do that with New York. We could do it with Los Angeles. So we're making a determination now. Do we go to Chicago or do we go to a place like New Orleans, where we have a great governor, Jeff Landry, who wants us to come in and straighten out a very nice section of this country. I want to go into Chicago, and I have this incompetent governor that doesn't want us. Do you know that this weekend, 72 people were shot in Chicago? So in 3 weeks, I lost almost 35 people were killed. It could have been stopped. If you look at Washington, D.C., 3 weeks ago, it was the same or worse. And now it's considered a totally safe zone.
Okay. Hard to argue with anything he says there. And I'm not saying don't go. Let me repeat myself. I'm not saying don't go. I want these cities cleaned up. Maybe the National Guard is a solution. But I want to make something perfectly clear. Washington, D.C. is not Chicago. Because the United States federal government controls Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. exists at the behest of the United States government. That is territory the United States government controls top to bottom. Therefore, even the dirtball commie mayor of D.C. has to get up and give press conferences. Well, it is working. It's working very well. Why'd she say that, that dirty commie? She has no other choice. But the United States government does not control Chicago, does not control New York City. It's outside of their control. Who does control Chicago? What kind of welcome can the National Guard anticipate? What kind of cooperation can they anticipate with the Chicago Police Department? Well, here's the mayor.
Are you prepared to defend this land that was built by slaves, a land that was built by indigenous people, a land that is built by workers? Are you prepared to defend this land? The people United will always prevail. I need you all to stand firm, to stand strong. If this president decides to continue to break this Constitution.
The National Guard comes in. Unlike D.C., the Chicago Police Department says, we're not working with you. You're not going to supplement anything. Hey, you want to go solve some crime? Say hello to the South Side. By the way, that's where all of these shootings and murders take place. Chicago is a hub for the drug cartels. Therefore, Chicago gang members murder each other in droves for control of those drugs. It's all in the South Side of Chicago where people die in stacks. We're going to send in the National Guard without the cooperation of the Chicago Police Department. What happens if you wake up one morning and there's a Chicago gangbanger, black kid, dead with a National Guardsman standing over him? What are the optics of that? Or even worse, what are the optics if it's a National Guard soldier, husband, wife, kids at home, dead on a street corner in Chicago? Not saying don't go. I'm saying be careful. And the Trump administration knows this. That's why they haven't gone in yet. They're not stupid. They're well aware of what I just said. I'm concerned. Don't think that Chicago is D.C. It is not. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, we have a huge show for you. There was an Epstein press conference yesterday. It kind of felt dirty, to be honest with you. Mike Cernovich is going to join us to talk about that in a moment. Before he joins us, let me talk to you about how you feel. How's your mood? Something happens as you get older. You start to get tired easier, right? And you get down sometimes, don't you? Almost inexplicably. I'm not talking about you're watching a sad movie or something. You just get down sometimes. That's because your T levels are dropping unnaturally. And they're not dropping because you're getting older. They're dropping because you're drinking estrogen. You're showering in estrogen. Synthetic estrogens from women's birth control that are all through the soil, all through the water supply. If you don't start taking something to counteract that, you're going to get more tired and more down. A male vitality stack from Chalk will change your life. Natural herbal supplements. Jacking your T levels up 20% in 90 days, you are about to know that you haven't been feeling good once you start feeling good. Take it for 90 days. Get a subscription, 90 days, and tell me how you feel. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, maybe you saw a little bit of it, maybe you didn't. There was a press conference yesterday with a bunch of the Epstein victims, and Gloria Allred was there. And look, I know the line we're supposed to take, you know, they all deserve justice and whatnot. And believe me, victims deserve justice, and I have no doubt there are some there. But it felt kind of scummy to me. It felt scummy. Maybe it's the Gloria Allred part of it. It almost felt like I was being scammed a little bit, and I don't like feeling like that. Maybe Michael yelled at me for feeling like that. He's welcome to. Joining me now, my buddy Mike Cernovich, filmmaker and author. Mike, it felt dirty, man.
Yeah, it was a clown show. When I saw it, I held my thoughts because I didn't want to word things undiplomatically, but the press conference became a sideshow. People holding signs saying Trump's a pedo. It looked like a No Kings protest, to be quite frank. That's what I thought it was, a No Kings protest. And I understand why Massey did it. Marjorie Taylor Greene is usually great. She probably didn't realize what she was walking into. But how can anyone think that the whole Epstein file thing is not a debacle? Because Trump handled it poorly, to understate it. And then Massey, who the first time he ever posted about it was in 2024. We've been talking about this. I think I was on your show talking about this in 2020, maybe years ago. You'd have to check. But this is not something that magically appeared in 2024. And then Massey tweets about it one or two times when Biden's in office. And now Massey sees a get Trump angle and he's all in on it. So we have to be honest here about what has happened. Trump was obviously given bad intel by people who I think don't have America's best interests in mind. Trump really screws a pooch on it. How, you know, you don't support me if you want these files. Like, what are you talking about? And then Massey uses it because Massey and Trump have been feuding. And I was a Massey supporter during the first round of feuds, to be clear. I think we've talked about this, you know, we're getting old. Back in the day, like, we've talked about all this, but I guess if it's a person's first time watching it, they think we're reacting to some new thing. No, this is a part of an ongoing conversation we've had for 5, 6, 7 years, right? Massey, Trump, Epstein files, and the press conference was a culmination of Massey's feud with Trump.
Yeah, I guess we can focus on the Massey angle of it for a second. A lot of MAGA people are very angry with Massey for it, and I certainly understand the anger, but, you know, Donald Trump has very publicly blasted him, very publicly threatened to primary him, has tried to primary him out, and this is a contact sport. As people know, if you declare war, they're going to declare war back. You can say Massey did it just to get Trump, and I would say, well, yeah, what did you think? He was just going to lay down and let you... Look, bullets get shot both ways in war. Trump declared it, now it's on.
Sure, and I backed Massey during the first feud, and I thought it was stupid for Trump to even have a feud because you're not going to primary Massey. Well, what do they say? You don't start fights you know you're going to lose. All you've done now is create an enemy. But the reason I bring the feud angle into it is because Massey's office didn't talk to people like me who are familiar with the case and say, hey, can you give me a lay of the land? Well, you know, who can you trust? How did this come about? And then that meeting or whatever you want to call that thing yesterday, it probably wouldn't have happened at all. But if it had happened, that wouldn't have been a Me Too 2.0, where there's all these vague accusations. Now, we have a list and we're gonna release the list. And then, oh no, we're not gonna release the list because if we do, we're gonna get sued. I don't know if anybody's been napping, but if a woman accuses a man of something, he's not suing. His life is more or less destroyed, right? I don't know what exactly, you know, look what E. Joan Carroll did to Trump and that completely rigged thing. So that's not a credible point of view at all. So now Massey's claiming that he'll go on the House floor and because of speech and debate immunity, release the name. So in other words, the people who are going to get called out aren't going to have any due process at all. I don't know, man. I don't know how anybody can defend that.
Okay, Mike, can you give, for people who have been watching, you and I discuss this for years and years and years, you are great about the lay of the land with this, and there's so much crap information and headline chasing and click chasing out there. What is the lay of the land? What do we know? What do we believe? How did Trump screw it up? Give us the lay of the land.
The lay of the land was that there was a mop-up operation that was conducted in 2018, 2019. And if you follow the timeline of the case, I had sued to unseal Epstein files in a defamation case involving Ghislaine Maxwell. The Miami Herald later joined that lawsuit. We lost at trial. We went at appeal, or we lost at the trial court. It didn't go all the way to trial. It was a hearing. It went on appeal. The appellate court said this clearly was wrong. They should be released. 2 days later, Epstein's arrested. And then everybody thought, okay, we're going to have some kind of answers. But then this was me. People can confirm it. This is not money murdering quarterbacking. I read the indictment against Jeffrey Epstein and I said, why was he only charged with getting massages at his New York apartment? And then I go, oh, that way all of the other properties can be cleaned up by the intelligence agencies and all the evidence can be taken and destroyed. I said that immediately. People can go back and read my tweets about it immediately. So then what happened was that the other properties were cleaned out. Then 3 weeks later, the properties are searched by the FBI after everything has been picked out. So there's the Epstein files. Whoever was there before the FBI got there has the Epstein files. This all happened, you know, 18, 19.
Mike, what do we believe about the man? I mean, a lot of people who spend, you know, a lot of time online, maybe reading some some weird sources. A lot of people believe that he's running an international sex trafficking ring, which obviously he may have been. Others believe that he was some sort of a CIA asset, a wealthy guy who had wealthy, powerful men, and similar to, you know, P. Diddy, hires prostitutes to come in when rich, powerful men come to his home, and some of them are underage. What do you believe? You're the one who knows more than I do.
Yeah, my beliefs is that he was flying women from around the world, that they weren't checking IDs necessarily. It was a party place. And by the way, before somebody tries to clip that, I'm not saying that's defensible, but I don't think it was necessarily what other people think. And then he was, of course, blackmailing people. Everyone who had any kind of encounter with him saw the camera, hidden cameras everywhere. My bookcase behind me, you know what they are, Jesse? Books in a bookcase. There's no peephole. There's no, like, if you start moving books around, you're not going to see a microphone and a peephole and everything. So obviously Epstein was blackmailing people, and or at least keeping things as an insurance policy. And because every man knows what, right? Every man knows what if you're in the game. No money, no sex. Which, so for those of people who want to get famous for the wrong reasons, let me just tell you that that's how you're going to be taken down. So people who don't follow those rules end up compromised by others. And Epstein obviously had compromised a number of very powerful people. But the whole intelligence angle, here's what I never got, right? Let's say, for example, because Bill Gates and Epstein have been connected, so we're not pulling names out of thin air. What is the Mossad, you know, going to need Bill Gates blackmailed for, right? That's to me, that was always the missing link. I know that the Cloak and Dagger movie angle is so much more appealing than Epstein sort of kept people under his thumb for his own enrichment. But I don't see what is Epstein going to be able to do that the CIA or Mossad or other groups couldn't do on their own. And Bill Gates would play ball anyway. That's what I don't get is why, you know, the regime doesn't need to blackmail Bill Gates, right? The regime doesn't need, they would need to blackmail you. They would need to blackmail me, right? You don't blackmail people who, Reid Hoffman, what are you gonna blackmail Reid Hoffman with? Reid Hoffman's gonna do whatever the regime tells him to do, right? Whatever message the regime comes up with at Aspen and Bilderberg and all these other events, he's gonna do. So for me, that was always the big, well, it's a great story. It's a great plot line for a movie, but the people close to Epstein were not right-wing people, right? It wasn't, oh, this great conservative guy. Like, it wasn't Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson, you would want to try to use leverage on, right? Because Tucker's not going to play ball. You're not going to play ball. Other people aren't going to play ball. But Reid Hoffman and Bill Gates, who, you know, I think are scummy people, that's a separate question. They're blackmailing with what? Make them do what? They're going to do it anyway.
Yeah. Those powerful people. Mike, before I let you go, I do have to ask you. I talked a little bit in the open very briefly about Trump sending in the troops, potentially sending in the troops to other places like Chicago. Not at all against it. I need to clarify that for the 10th time on this show. But I am more concerned because we don't control Chicago the way we control D.C. We don't control it like L.A., like we control D.C. This is a hostile political environment, and I could see it not going well.
Yeah, people have always been worried about the left orchestrating a Kent State event. Because most people mm-hmm. to this day don't know that the Kent State event, as we were taught, was actually false. Kent State, they were Antifa, mm-hmm. they were Marxists, they were throwing bricks and trying to kill the National Guard people, and then things popped off a little bit. So a lot of people are justifiably concerned that the left could orchestrate a Kent State-style event. But the difference is that look what they tried to do to Rittenhouse. Even though it was a travesty that Rittenhouse was ever indicted, or Daniel Penny was ever indicted, because of Elon, God bless him. I know people have their concerns with him and everything else, but they can't gaslight people the way they do. So if they do a Kent State kind of event, like, you know, Rittenhouse would have been dead without the Daily Caller people and without even censorship era Twitter. This is just objective fact. Daniel Penny, same thing. So it's much more difficult for the left to orchestrate these kind of things where, oh, look, take for example, that woman who was running at the cop and got shot. Debunked immediately. right? It was debunked so fast that I was 2 days behind it. I go, oh, wow, I didn't even see this one. Because with free speech on X, immediately you're like, oh, that's debunked. There was that one where the woman claimed, oh, I was cooking spaghetti and the cop shot her. And then you see that she's about to throw a boiling water at the cop, right? And you're like, okay, that one is debunked. So I'm not as worried about the Kent State style narrative forming, because we do have truth on our side and we do have, for now, freedom of speech.
Mike, my brother, as always, I appreciate you. Come back. RFK had a spicy hearing. We'll talk to Jennifer Gilardi about it in a moment. Let me talk to you about remembering to put your money where your morals are. You know, there was a period of time, I'd say 2-3 years ago, where it seemed like everybody had gone mad, and every corporation most definitely, especially in the wake of the George Floyd stuff. And then when you told people to put their money where their morals are, then it was an easier thing. But now that it feels like we're kind of maybe getting a hold of things culturally again, we can get lazy and we can forget. AT&T has not changed. Verizon, T-Mobile, they haven't changed at all. They still hate your guts. And they work as hard as they possibly can, maybe quieter, but as hard as they possibly can against you. Don't pay them for it. Not when Pure Talk is there. Pure Talk's the patriotic solution. You'll pay less. It's the same service. You keep your phone. You keep your phone number. And they hire Americans. Switch to Pure Talk. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Change has its enemies. That's why we need new blood at CDC. That's also why it's imperative that we remove officials with conflicts of interest and catastrophically bad judgment and political agendas. We need unbiased, politics-free, transparent, evidence-based science in the public interest. Those are the guiding principles behind the changes at the CDC, and that is what you can expect all across our agency for the next 3 years. We are the sickest country in the world. That's why we have to fire people at CDC. They did not do their job. This was their job to keep us healthy.
Thank you.
And I need to fire some of those people to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Spicy today. I enjoyed it. I bet Jennifer Gilardi was absolutely doing backflips. If she can do backflips, probably dangerous. Joining me now, Jennifer Gilardi, Senior Policy Analyst at the Heritage Foundation. Jennifer, can you do a backflip?
I can't, but I can do cartwheels. And I was doing some of those in the office today. At least I was jumping up and down. You know, everybody can do that and probably should, given the state of obesity rates in the country. Just do a couple jumping jacks. It's fine.
Yeah, jumping jacks actually are a great exercise. Now, back to the hearing today.
Yes.
How'd it go?
I mean, he obviously got grilled, but what do you expect from members in Congress that are so entrenched in orthodoxy, in the medical establishment, in pharmaceutical companies? He's exactly right. We're seeing the pushback we expected to see when we drained the swamp. Trump promised it in 2016. He wasn't able to accomplish it because of, you know, the forces working against them. He wisened up. He put people in place that would shake up everything that were kind of anti-establishment. We're seeing this in the State Department, we're seeing it in the Defense Department, and we're seeing it here. And it's exactly what the people voted for. The only people that are going kicking and screaming are mostly the people that get funds from big pharma, big ag. So I think this is what we can expect. They didn't give him a chance to even breathe. I think it was disgraceful and disrespectful, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, speaking of which, here's Ron Wyden and Michael Bennett with some grilling.
I hope that you will tell the American people how many preventable child deaths are an acceptable sacrifice for enacting an agenda that I think is fundamentally cruel and defies common sense. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do I get a reply? Or... Senator, you've sat in that chair for how long, 20, 25 years, while the chronic disease in our children went up to 76%. and you said nothing. Senator, are you saying that a mRNA vaccine has never been associated with myocarditis or pericarditis in teenagers? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
I am simply trying to say that the people that you have put on that panel after firing the entire...
You're evading the question.
No, I'm asking the questions here,
Mr. Kennedy. You're evading that question.
I'm asking the questions.
They're going to have to go off-label.
This is crazy talk. You're just making stuff up.
To prescribe a vaccine for children. I'm not making things up.
You're so wrong on your facts.
You're interrupting me. And, sir, you're a charlatan.
You're making it up. You're twisting. Yeah, you are.
Secretary,
you are being dishonest right now.
If you want to talk about mental health and gun violence in this country, if you want to talk about mental health and gun violence in this country, we should be talking about that. Because that's what the
parents of the
Annunciation School.
You don't want to talk. You want to harangue and you want to politically, you want to have partisan politics.
That was your promise,
no,
Mr. Kennedy.
I never promised that I was going to recommend products with which there is no indication.
When you said,
and I know you've taken $855,000 from pharmaceutical companies, Senator.
It's hard not to notice, beyond the entertainment value, how many big pharma talking points do come out of these hearings. Just how bought is the United States Senate?
It seems to be greatly bought. I think there's two things. I think there's money involved. You're always going to get people, like I said, kicking and screaming when they're being paid a lot. But also, if I'm being generous, some of these people, this is their orthodoxy. This is their religion. Otherwise, why aren't they willing and open to hear alternative, I don't want to say alternative facts, but dissenting data on a product that didn't work, particularly on the COVID vaccines? What I can't seem to get my head around is why they are so entrenched on keeping these available for children when, at the best, they did nothing. They were ineffectual. At the worst, they harmed young adults with myocarditis, like he was trying to get out there, pericarditis. There's evidence of that. What are they hanging on to? I think part of it is an identity crisis. They place their identity in some sort of boogie savior, right? Some sort of Christ that they believe is going to save the world, like a vaccine. Otherwise, I don't understand. It challenges the core of who they are and everything they've believed up until this point. Vaccines save the world, you know, despite the fact that a lot of kind of the health and the healing from a lot of these diseases has come from sanitation measures, cleaning up kind of sewage and medical practices, right? Not necessarily. We don't know that vaccines, a lot of them have been given after the fact, when disease rates were already starting to come down. Was it the vaccine or was it just natural immunity? There's a lot of questions around these, and why they are holding on so tightly, I think, is when you, and we've discussed this about the ideology, when something becomes your identity and something, there's a crack in that, right? You believe in something for so long, there's a crack, you start to go, well, what else have I been lied to about? What else do I believe that's false? I think we're seeing some of that, but obviously the money is a good source of their resistance as well.
What do we know now about all these childhood vaccines? It's a topic of endless debate back and forth. Some people will say it kills kids, it causes autism, it saves kids, it this, it that. If you want to cause an online debate, just say anything on either side of the childhood vaccine thing and get ready for the barking hyenas to start snarling. What do we know?
We don't know enough, and that's the point. We want better research. We want to understand. There have been no truly double-blind, placebo-controlled trials on vaccines. That's exactly what Kennedy is calling for. That's what the CDC and kind of the new guard at the CDC is calling for. We don't know enough. We don't know enough about what's causing autism. We want to have funding for good research and. To say that the science is settled, we're kind of going back to his confirmation hearing. The science is never settled. Why can't we question something is going wrong? And why are we insisting on following the people that were heads of the agency when the thing started to go wrong? Like Kennedy makes some really good points. It's almost laughable. Like you said, it's good entertainment because aside it from being very sad, it is kind of good comedy because I think these senators are making fools of themselves. There's something, they're so adamant that something's up.
Jennifer, why is the Heritage Foundation pushing for a new Manhattan Project? Who are we going to nuke?
Yes, we're not nuking anyone. Leave it to the liberal media to scandalize something that is really common sense, that everybody knows, is that the nuclear family is the foundation for a great America and even a healthier America. And, you know, shocker, Heritage Foundation supports family policy. We're doing what we've always done. We're just kind of putting more focus on it. We're excited to release exactly what we've been working on. And the Washington Post, thank you, like our domestic policy head, Roger Severino, mentioned in the article. Thanks for bringing attention to it. And we're excited to roll out what we actually recommend. You know, there are studies, as we know, children do best with a mother and a father in a nuclear family. I kind of lived the liberal ideology, as we've talked about ad nauseum, and even as someone who's not married without kids, I understand the benefits of it for a rightly ordered society, for a civil society, and that's really what we're about.
Jennifer, it saddens me. I saw a recent chart, I'm sure you've talked about, I'm sure you've seen it, that shows, you know, we talk about birth rates, but right-wingers are reproducing. In fact, they're reproducing above replacement level. They are getting married and they're making babies and they're moving on and being happy, but left-wingers simply are not. That's what all the falling birth rates are about. And I know we're supposed to celebrate that because the kooky commies aren't reproducing, but I find that to be so incredibly sad that half of our society is just kind of checked out of it.
Right. And I feel the same way. Yeah, I always say I think we need to be very careful between identifying as a libertarian or conservative. Part of a conservative platform is caring what happens to us as a country, as community, as our fellow citizens. What does it mean to be a citizen? It means to work together in this kind of political environment, in this cultural environment, to have the greatest benefit for the most amount of people. That's what politics aims to do. And you're right, it does make us sad at Heritage when we see women who kind of condemn marriage, saying the very thing that they were born to do is kind of a scourge on their life and doesn't bring them joy or restricts their freedom. It's kind of sad. I mean, me being older and not being able to have children, I look at babies and I get a little bit of regret. I don't have much in my life. God took me down the path he was meant to, but, you know, I get a little sad that I don't have children, and I try to channel that instead of being angry at people or lashing out. I try to channel that in other ways. I play with my kid, my friends' children's and my boyfriend's kids. I get active and watching them participate in sports. So, you know, you don't have to go down that path to acknowledge that it's helpful for society, that it's good for children. I think we need to start, just like Kennedy is saying with America, Make America Healthy Again, we need to start thinking about the children and what we're leaving behind for them and the kind of life they're going to inherit.
Yeah. Plus, you can do other things women are meant to do, like cook and clean. Jennifer, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Come back soon. We'll be back. Well, by now, unless you're a complete moron or living under a rock somewhere, you've figured out that Gavin Newsom wants to be president of the United States, and he's quite obviously running already to be president of the United States. But Gavin Newsom has a problem. He's governor of California. Beautiful and wonderful as California is, it's viewed as a complete commie, left-wing, kooky state full of nutballs, and that's going to be a hard sell in swing states, and Gavin Newsom is no moron. He knows this. So what's the game? Well, he's having sharp people on the right on to, I guess, spar with a little, maybe. Joining me now, one of those people, Sean Spicer, who you know, host of the wonderful Sean Spicer Show. Sean, you went and sat down with the old governor. How was that?
I actually kind of enjoyed it. You know, we had a really interesting civil discussion. I think, look, he's got a big audience. There's no doubt about it. And I got to make a pretty, I think, compelling case about what President Trump's doing and why his policies are moving the country in the right direction. So if I can open the eyes up of a bunch of people who don't see that, That's great, right? You and I both have shows on the First Television Network and on YouTube. And I think when people on the left have their eyes opened to the reality of what's going on and the policies that we're offering and the solutions and the results, a lot of times I hear people saying, I've never heard that before.
Huh.
So I'm sort of evangelizing the left, I think. Anyway, getting out there, I'll take any opportunity. I'll go to any forum. My view is we're right. You know that phrase. And I like we should be willing to take our message pretty much anywhere.
Sean, what was your measure of the guy? Obviously, I've never met him personally. Many people who have opinions all over the place. I am concerned that he's going to make a run at it. He's a prolific fundraiser, has access to a whole bunch of money, governor of the richest, most powerful state in the union. I think he's going to make a very serious run at it. Do you?
100%. 100%. He is, like, look, I talked to him off camera about this because I do a morning show on my YouTube channel called The Morning Meeting, and Mark Halper and I have a little bit of bet going. I believe there's no question he's running for a million reasons. Mark is less certain. And so I said to him off camera, I meant to say it on the show, but we ran out of time. I said, you know, we got a little bet going. And he said, you know, I don't feel like I'm betraying anything, but he said, look, I'm thinking about it. I don't think there's any question about that. But, you know, the guy's got a family. And one of the things that you realize in these conversations, Jesse, is, you know, there are things that do bind us together. We both have young kids. We had an opportunity to talk off camera about the challenges that kids face on social media. And so there are some things on a personal level that you can have a discussion with somebody about that aren't necessarily political in nature that you might share some common issues with. And in this case, I think we both had a very off-camera discussion about the challenges that young kids face today and with respect to social media. And so I say that because I think he's running for a million reasons, one of which, if you, and I said to him, you know, when I looked at the media that you got when you went to South Carolina, any political aide would say that it was really well executed. And then a couple days later, Governor Beshear of Kentucky went, and it was abysmal. So if you're Governor Newsom, and you go do a trip like this, and you realize, wow, whatever I'm doing is resonating with my left-wing base, but when my fellow governors go, they get panned. You got to think, I mean, you can't be in office as long as Gavin Newsom has without a pretty healthy ego. I don't think that anyone would ever doubt that. He probably would agree with that. And I think that when you realize how weak this field is, and let's be honest, I mean, we're grading on a curve here. You've got to say to yourself, I got to do it. I got to do it for the good of my party. So there's no question in my mind he is running. And part of the reason that I think he's doing this podcast is so that he can say that he's having meetings and discussions with people.
Sean, how does he hold up when he stands on that debate stage with AOC on one side of him and Jasmine Crockett on the other side of him, and they're coming out for full-blown communism? I need reparations. Every kooky idea, because they try to sell books and make a name for themselves, getting to the left of him, and he can't take that position and then have a hope or a prayer of winning Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, or Michigan. How do you navigate that minefield?
Well, look, as I said a moment ago, the guy's been in office for like 60 years. He was mayor of San Francisco, lieutenant governor. So he's been adept at dealing with this. And obviously, if you can get elected statewide in California for as long as he has, you clearly know how to handle a very liberal base. So I would actually argue that he probably is better at this than almost anybody, which is sort of how do you say something appealing to your base without really getting in too deep to it? That's where I think, and look, this is not his first rodeo. I would, you know, juxtapose that to AOC and Crockett in particular can throw out a bunch of words, but they're an inch deep at best. I think that's probably being generous. So the one thing about Newsom is that he has been on the big stage. He has taken some serious at-bats, which unlike that, I mean, those guys, their idea of a tough interview is Rachel Maddow. So I will say this, the governor, and I think part of the reason that he's having these discussions, he had one with me, he had one with Charlie Kirk, he had one with Steve Bannon, is that it's kind of like it's spring training for him. He's like, okay, how do I take on, you know, conservatives, MAGA types, and engage with them. Look, you could watch the conversation that we had And you'll see, we never raised our voice. We never got mad. I think I made some pretty strong points and pushed back on his liberal positions. But I think he knows what he's doing. The guy's a shrewd politician, right? And I think he is trying to get ready for this race. And that's where I think the funny part is, the guys on the left, the Jasmine Crockett's, the AOCs, et cetera, they're talking to themselves. And that's great for a primary. But Gavin Newsom's, he's already thinking ahead. And I, as I said earlier, Jesse, you look at this field, it is so pathetic. I literally think to myself, if I were a Democratic governor right now, why wouldn't you get into this race? It is so pathetically weak.
Is there a concern, Sean, that you're helping him get ready? You mentioned it's spring training. Well, you're the opposition team helping him get ready for the season. You know, is there a concern with that?
Yeah, I got a bunch of pushback that said you're platforming this guy. He's got 200,000 people. Look, at the end of the day, if you're watching Gavin Newsom, I would argue the opposite. I'm out there evangelizing these folks who have gotten spoon-fed left-wing talking points and told that Donald Trump is horrible and bad, and I got on to Gavin Newsom's. I got platformed by him to tell his audience why what Donald Trump is doing and what the MAGA movement is doing is moving this country in a better, safer, more prosperous way. So, you know, look, if we want to talk to ourselves, then great. But at the end of the day, what Donald Trump did in the last election, he went places, he did things that no other politician would do, and he was rewarded with the popular vote in winning every battleground state. It wasn't because he sat in a hole and just talked to, you know, went on War Room with Steve Bannon or I'm Right with Jesse Kelly or even Sean Spicer. This guy went everywhere and he put a message and he was rewarded with not just the votes, but think about the number of young men, Black men and women, Black men and, you know, Hispanics. He was rewarded because he went places and he took that message of America first and a results oriented record. So that's what I think. We've got to do that kind of stuff. Now, we do it without fear or favor. If you watch that interview with Gavin Newsom, I pushed back. I didn't. I'm not there to play like suck up to the host, which is what a lot of Republicans do on Sunday shows. Oh, Kristen, Margaret, thanks for having me on. I'm so excited. You know what? I mean, today that I'm my view is we should be unapologetic in our support for the America First agenda and the results that we're getting: order, security, crime, Donald Trump's doing in D.C., tax cuts, tariffs. I mean, look, I'm out there, and I said at the beginning of the of my appearance with him that I'm very proud of what Donald Trump is doing. I'm very proud to be a fiscal and social conservative. So as long as we lead with pride in our positions, I think we should go everywhere and do everything. The difference is that, as I said, too many Republicans go on these shows and just, you're right. Oh, that's an area of agreement. Thanks so much. Screw that. Let's be proud of what we're fighting for and spread and evangelize the brand.
Sean, you mentioned, well, you said you think J.D. Vance is going to be the next president, which of course begs the question, I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but that's fun, isn't it? Who's the VP? Are you Rubio? Is it DeSantis? Is it some dark horse we don't see?
Look, it's very possible. The one thing that's interesting, I had a conversation with a guy named Nate Morris the other day. He's running for the Senate in Kentucky. Good friend of JD's. He's gotten to know him. My point in saying that, Jesse, is that JD is going to cultivate a whole nother group of folks into the America First agenda. Now, on his face, I think Marco Rubio would be fantastic. He is shown to be an unbelievable warrior in the America First agenda as Secretary of State. But my former colleague, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, has been really digging into the MAHA movement in Arkansas, making Arkansas a better state, a healthier state. So she'd be another great pick. Look, the one difference between our side and theirs is that you and I could probably spend 2 hours going back and forth creating a list, and that would be the short list of people who would make a great vice president. I can't even tell you who'd make a great president on the left, and I'm being trying to be objective, and that's the difference between our side and theirs. We're full of ideas. You think about Trump's cabinet. I've said this every time. When Trump has a cabinet meeting, I get excited. It's like a report card to the American people. Every one of them goes around the room and has to say, here's what I've done in the last 30 days. And every one of them, I go, you know what? That person could be a vice president. Many of them could be president. So our side on the right is not lacking in depth. Their side is really pathetic.
What about Glenn Youngkin, Sean? It's hard to ignore the man who won the governorship in a state that was thought to be very blue, has done quite well in that state, yet you never hear his name.
Yeah, I live in that state. I mean, look, I think Governor Youngkin's done a lot of good in Virginia. I'm, you know, considering where we were, but a couple things politically, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, Jesse, but Youngkin, McAuliffe lost that race more than Youngkin won it. And when we look at what we've got, we've lost the House, we've lost the Senate under his tenure. So I would just argue that, look, he's been a great governor, so I'm not trying to be disparaging, but at the end of the day, what are you campaigning on? What have you done? In the Commonwealth of Virginia, we lost both houses of the state legislature here in Virginia. So I'm really not sure what you campaign on. What is it that he did? He didn't cut taxes. He didn't. There's nothing that he can turn to and say, I got this done and I'm campaigning on it. So I think, you know, look, he did a great job getting Virginia back on track, considering where it was headed. Terry McAuliffe would have been an absolute disaster as governor again. But at the end of the day, as somebody who lives in the Commonwealth of Virginia, I'm not entirely sure what the case that he would make would be.
Sean, thank you as always, my brother. Come back soon. Lighten the mood. Next. Be very grateful you still live in the United States of America as we lighten the mood here, because we still have some semblance of freedom in this country. And if the government turns too evil, we have lots of guns to do something about it. They don't have that luxury over there in the UK. And we're watching in real time as that government gets more and more evil. The people get more and more angry. And who knows where this is going to go. British comedy writer Graham Linehan, he put up a tweet. Just put up a tweet saying, you know, it's essentially men can't become women kind of a thing. You know, get the tranny nonsense out of here. That's all he said. Well, he gets arrested, surrounded by cops and arrested the second he gets to the UK. This is the kind of courage. This is how you push back against tyrants. This is how he showed up to court.
This is where you sit at.
Do you have a few words ahead of today's appearance?
That's wonderful. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.